Hi, everyone. This is Erica Spicer-Mason with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast Series. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Today, we'll be talking about cancer care. And for this discussion, I'm thrilled to be joined by Ellen Rudy, the head of population health at Wealthy, which offers caregiving concierge and family support. Ellen, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Erica. It's nice to be here.
Thrilled to have you. And before we get into our discussion, would you like to share just a little bit more about yourself, your role, organization, whatever you're comfortable sharing?
Sure. Well, by background, I'm actually an epidemiologist by training, but I've always been interested in access to healthcare and population health and where are there gaps in the population health system. So that journey has gone through a lot of different places. I've worked in managed care and in public health, and I was really compelled to come to Wealthy, the current organization I work at, because I really see a gap in the whole system in supporting families in the healthcare ecosystem.
Thanks so much, Ellen. Really helpful to hear a little bit more about you. And as a former public health student myself, I definitely share those passions. So really excited to talk more about some of this critical support that we can be offering to families and caregivers. So just to kind of set the scene for our listeners too, new cancer diagnoses are set to hit a new high in 2024. Which is, you know, of course, concerning. And I wanted to get your take on how you think this trend will affect industry stakeholders, such as payer organizations. And then on the patient side, especially for families who are navigating new diagnoses, what do you think is important to know?
Well, I'll take the latter question first. When you're in a doctor's office and you get a serious diagnosis like cancer, you know, it really is one of the scariest and pivotal moments in that person's life and in the family's life. I mean, imagine, you know, even when the doctor's telling you about the diagnosis, you're probably not even listening that well. So I guess I have to say first, I recognize that every family and every member is going to have a unique and personal journey through their cancer care. So I start with that. But when I think about what are my thoughts on what does a person do when they're newly diagnosed? I would say four things. You know, first, really think about leaning into your care circle. Bring in the people close to you in your life. You know, obviously your nuclear family, and then spread out and bring in your friends and your neighbors and therapists and case managers and providers. I mean, the stronger the care circle, the more support you have. And, you know, you don't have to do this alone. And then two, I would say, really understand your diagnosis, really research it and understand what are the cancer centers out there and the providers and what are the treatments out there? What is the side effects? You know, one of the things at Wealthy, which is a care concierge service, is that that's a lot of the research we do for families. You know, we're back there looking at reputable sources and really gathering all that information so that the family can actually make informed decisions. And then third, I would say, keep living, keep doing the things that you love. You know, I had a friend, he was actually diagnosed with a brain tumor. He was this incredibly active guy. And instead of being cautious after he got his diagnosis, he actually just kept doing the things he loved. He skied and he surfed and he traveled with his two small girls. And he lived his life to the end. And he said he did it because that's what brought him joy. He was going to keep living. And I think that's really important. And it doesn't have to be so, you know, Erica, it doesn't have to be so extreme. It's just even like cooking with your family or just the activities that bring you joy, because that actually reduces stress, which actually helps your immune system. And then fourth, I would say, you know, they always say like, try to stay present and, you know, try to not focus so much on the what ifs of the future, all the things that can really worry you. I had another friend who had diagnosed with leukemia, and she ended up having to go into that hospital for a bone marrow transplant. And she was in the hospital for 2 months, incredibly excruciating process. And somebody came by and taught her meditation. And she said that is what got her through that experience. And afterwards, I remember talking to her and she said, "Why isn't it that every person who gets diagnosed with cancer learns these techniques to cope with? Because it really helps you just get through and just focus on what's immediately in front of you."
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks, Alan. And, as you were talking about one of the critical pieces of those four areas, understanding and researching your diagnosis, I can see how having support there would be critical because just the sheer shock of the news of a diagnosis and the overwhelm, I'm just picturing myself in that situation. And certainly I'd want support in that part of the
Yeah, it
process.
can be really paralyzing actually getting these new diagnoses. We see it quite a bit in our data at Wealthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the other piece of that, I'm curious, I mentioned a bit earlier payer organizations. So with this increase in cancer incidence or prevalence, what does that mean for those organizations and what should they consider as well?
Well, it means that they're going to have, with the increased diagnosis, they're going to have increase in services, but it's also going to be increased services or responsibilities for the family. And I think that's often gets forgotten. 90% of care is done by families, in the home. And so as treatments are out there, or cancer centers, et cetera, I think helping and supporting the family and making sure that they are supported and they understand what's going on will really help payers, because then the members are going to have a more informed decision about the decisions they make on their treatment options.
Absolutely. Really important to consider. And as you're talking about these responsibilities for the family, it's having me wonder too how cancer caregiving has really shifted over the years. And I know caregiving can be seen from the clinical standpoint or family caregiving. So, in your view, how has that shifted over the years? And why is it important for health plans to keep those cancer caregivers' health and well-being in mind when it comes to support? What do you advise?
Yeah, so great question. And let me take a step back. And in the last decade, there has been a significant number of new cancer treatments out there. When I was in grad school, I was a research assistant, and I worked for this pulmonary immunologist. This was a while ago. And at the time, he was studying the immune system. He was studying the cytokines and T cells. And he was telling me, he said, "The future of cancer is going to be so different." He said, "Our immune system is going to be, we're going to use our immune system to attack cancer cells." And he said, "You'll look back and look at our old ways of doing, cancer treatment. It'll almost look barbaric." And so, fast forward, we are now with immunotherapy and precision medicine, like cancer treatments have really changed. I mean, there's now an explosion of different treatments and new drugs out on the market. And a lot of these are now being done in outpatient and in the home setting. So having said that, think about the caregiver. So if more treatments and options are outpatient or in the home, it's the caregiver who now holds a lot of the responsibility. They're responsible for monitoring very complicated medication schedules. They've got to be looking for symptoms, changes in symptoms, and monitoring side effects, and knowing when they need to call in, to maybe bring the person back into the doctor. And then with all these different treatments, they're also having to coordinate quite a bit of doctor schedules. They're going to have to coordinate visits, different specialists, and gathering medical records. So it's really just increased the responsibility on the caregiver. Now, they want to do it. So it's not a negative, and it's such a positive that these treatments are out there. And people with cancer, they want to be in the home. That is exactly where they want to be. That is their quality of life. But I think it's just to recognize that the responsibility is increasing for the caregiver. And what happens with that is that there's this increase in stress level. And sometimes I don't even know if the caregivers are even aware of this increase in stress level. And there's consequences to the increases in stress level. So the next question is really, what are those consequences? And, you know, why should health plans care about it? So let's think about it. You know, there was a study done actually just recently that said academic centers and community health cancer centers are doing a really good job now of identifying who is the caregiver to support this person with cancer. But they are doing a horrible job of actually screening the caregiver for their stress level, for their confidence in taking care of the member, and for their anxiety level. And so there is definite downstream consequences of that. First, there's a what's called caregiver burnout. So let's start there. Caregiver burnout shows up in a couple different ways. You'll see an increase in depression. You'll see an increase in irritability of the caregiver. There's a strained relationship. They'll start to have a strained relationship with the person they're taking care of. Their quality of life goes down. And what happens then is that this really impacts the patient care. So patient care, then you have to think about, you've got a caregiver who's stressed, you know, and so what happens? They start to miss scheduling appointments. They may have medication errors. They may not have the emotional support for the patient, and then that compromises their patient care. And then there's, to a payer, there's increased healthcare costs. So there was a study done of older caregivers, and they cost the health plan an additional $4,000 plus per year compared to a non-caregiver. And you can think of the reasons: their depression, they're not eating well, so there's increased frailty. And just generally, they actually delay in their own care. They don't go to a doctor's appointments if they, or if they have a symptoms, they're not recognizing it. So there's a lot of downstream consequences. And then the last one, and I know I've talked a lot, is just lost productivity at work. So if you're a family member and you're taking care of somebody at home who has cancer, but you're a full-time employee, that is an incredible stress on the system. And so what happens, you see definitely what's called absenteeism. So, you know, you have to take off a couple hours to take care of the person at home, or even when you're at work, you're having to make phone calls. And a lot of this can actually lead to even caregivers taking a leave of absence because of the stress of being a caregiver.
Ellen, I can't thank you enough for sharing all of that research and all of your insights here. So much of this resonates with what I've witnessed family members experience who've had caregivers, you know, to your point about having to take time off of work, feeling depressed, irritable, you know, that all rings so true. And it makes you think about how incredible it is that we've had these great advancements in care models and having folks be more comfortable at home with their treatments, but really needing to look at these unintended consequences too, and what can happen if they go unaddressed. So thanks again for outlining all of that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So tying this all together, you know, as you look ahead, how do you think healthcare organizations can begin to build or even bolster care infrastructure so that it better supports caregivers, especially those who are taking care of patients or family members who have terminal diagnoses? You know, where can they get started?
Yeah. Well, it's a great question. And when you think about it, you know, generally speaking, for the adult population, 20% of the adult population are caregivers. So it's a big population. And if you work for a healthcare organization, whether it's a hospital system, health insurance, or even a health tech company, if your organization has the word health in it and you work for it, then I would say that percentage goes up, because by default, your family is going to go to you to be the healthcare advisor. It happens in my own family. People come to me because I work in healthcare. So there's a need for a care infrastructure, not only in health plans and hospital systems, but I would say also in employer systems as well. So what can we do? You know, well, sometimes, a lot of times, you hear the word like, oh, we should screen more. And I would say, yes, we should screen for caregiver stress, but only if you have the resources behind it, like a caregiving support service. because you don't want to screen and then not do anything with it, you know, then it's just data. But you have a strong caregiving support benefit, and then you do some screening. Those two things are really important, number one, number two. And number three, I would say, is having a culture where it's okay to be a caregiver. You know, if you have a benefit out there, but you feel somewhat hesitant to use it, as if you don't want to say, hey, you know, I've got this stress at home, then that's not really helpful. And I've seen organizations really, you know, kind of step up and say, it's okay to be a caregiver. We're here to support you. And then finally, for all kinds of organizations, you know, healthcare providers and health insurance and employers, it's try to create some flexible work arrangements for those employees who are caregivers. That can go a really, really long way.
Absolutely. Such fantastic pieces of advice. Thanks, Alan. You know, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you think our listeners should know about all of this? Anything we might have missed?
I think one of the things is to think about, you know, with cancer care, you know, it's a spectrum of care. So you start with a diagnosis and you go through, you know, all the different treatments. And to have a support system there for the whole way, I think is really important. And at some point, it also gets to the point of end of life. So some cancer diagnosis, unfortunately, will be terminal. And I guess, you know, that is a pivotal moment when somebody is, you know, now recognizes that this is a terminal diagnosis. Then you're switching from a curative treatment to palliative treatment, to quality of life, to symptom management, but also planning, you know, planning for end of life. And I think that's a oftentimes not talked about enough now, but I also see the change happening. You know, I actually just finished an end of life doula certificate, and I just it tip of the iceberg of what I learned about that process. And I think having the support system to talk about it, that's the number one thing. Talk about the dying process, you know, let the member, the person who has cancer, talk about it, let the caregivers talk about it. And then having that emotional and support in place for that. And then having the planning part, you know, like what is the grieving process afterwards? What are the funeral arrangements like afterwards? I think that's also a really important part when you think about the spectrum of cancer care and support.
Oh, that's, thanks so much, Ellen. You know, if we had more time today, I would definitely ask a bunch of follow-up questions about the end-of-life doula certification program. That sounds fascinating and really necessary based on everything you've described today. So again, I appreciate you being here, sharing your insights, especially about a topic that can be a bit heavy, but for all stakeholders in healthcare, patients and families, sounds really critical.
Thank you, Erica. I really appreciate being here and talking about this subject. I really appreciate it.
Thanks again. And we'd also like to thank Wealthy for sponsoring today's episode. To our listeners, you can tune into more podcasts from Becker's Healthcare by visiting our podcast page at beckershospitalreview.com.